Anna Sheridan, missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. How did I
Someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil. There's no place for ghost stories in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.
Hello, and thanks for listening to the latest installment of Borders, Blatherings, the podcast where Mary and I shine a light on the curious, the shadowy, and the often very magical history of the Scottish Borderlands. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
Not too bad.
Good.
I'm getting along, but I've been having a thought. Can I just take you back to the last time we met to record an installment when we talked about the Eyemouth fishing disaster at the tail end of the 19th century. And I think I said towards the end that I felt both sad and very angered by that whole thing.
Yes.
And said, next time we meet, could we maybe dip into the more curious or magical part of your narrative archive, your extensive narrative archive. So I thought that, and with Halloween fast approaching, maybe this would be a good time to look at and talk about some stories that are specifically Scottish Borders.
Okay, yeah.
This time last year, I guess, we did the Halloween podcast, but
we
yes. we were duking for apples, we were guising or trick-or-treating.
No.
We talked about the origins,
that's
we talked
right.
about the fun, that, and we've done all that in general. So my question for you today is, do you have any stories up your sleeve that are a little bit curious or magical and which tick the box of kind of Halloween time? What do you think?
I have three little tales to tell.
Three
tales to tell that are very border specific.
That's the main thing, border specific.
And then I thought we could actually discuss why they're border specific, because I struggle with the fact that they are border specific.
Yeah. You're making me think of when we did the Arthurian legend some time ago, and we found that particularly the Merlin story, the core of that story seems to exist all around Europe.
Yes.
And yet there are nuanced changes in the way the story has developed. And are you, why border specific?
Yeah, why
border hopefully
specific?
As you tell me these little stories, we can challenge that. Why exactly are they border specific?
Indeed. Well, I'm going to start with a particularly grisly one.
Okay.
About the red caps. So red caps are, we're not quite sure what red caps are. They are sprites, or they are spirits, or they are goblins, or they are ghosts of the dear departed. And they live in ruins, ruined castles or forts or keeps and towers.
Of which we have many.
Of which we have many in the borders.
Yeah.
And they live up at the top of the sort of ramparts, as it were. And if you go around about the Halloween time of year, and if you go in the evening, I would admonish you to beware. Because what the red caps do is if they see you, they will break stones off the top of the ruins and throw the stones at your head to knock you unconscious. Once you fall down, they will then come down from the top of the ruins, grab more stones and batter you to death with rocks. And once the blood is flowing from your head, they take the red caps off their heads, dip it in the blood, and then put the caps back on their heads.
That's why they're called red caps. It's blood.
Because if they don't keep their caps soaked in blood, they themselves will die. And I don't know why they only appear in the Scottish borders. I can't find them anywhere else. There are ruined castles and forts right the way across Europe, and I can't find red caps anywhere but the Scottish borders.
What immediately springs to mind is the debatable lands and the fact that this was a bloody part of the world, the border itself.
And what bit of Europe wasn't? That's exactly the problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, that's the grisly tale. Now we have a bit of a, shall we say, a curious tale. We have a laird down near Jedburgh, and he is a house brownie. He has a wife and a couple of servants. His good lady wife is pregnant, and one night near Halloween, she starts to go into labour. So the laird is all very excited, rushes down and says to his servant, who's sort of snoozing by the fire, ride off to Jedburgh and get the midwife and ride back. And the servant thinks, oh, I suppose, but it's raining and it's windy and it's cold outside and he doesn't really want to go. But he's sort of sitting by the fire and the house brownie sort of sneaks out and thinks, I wonder. And he blows some dust into the servant's eyes and the servant falls asleep. The brownie puts on the servant's coat, the servant's boots, saddles a horse and rides to Jedburgh, fetches the midwife, rides all the way back. And the midwife comes in the door and rushes upstairs and the laird's all very excited. And after a couple of hours, the good lady wife has a son. Oh, it's lovely. And the laird is so happy. So he comes downstairs into the kitchen to discover his servant is still asleep. And he doesn't understand because not only is the servant still asleep, he doesn't have his muddy boots on or anything like that. And he's sort of looking to see what's happened. And he notices the brownie in the corner and says to the brownie, sort of, who are you and what are you and where are you? And the brownie says, I'm the house brownie. I live here. I've always lived here. You've just never seen me, but this is where I live. And he said, what happened to my servant? And the brownie said, oh, he just fell asleep. I went and got the midwife. And the laird said, oh, you're the one that rode all the way to Jedburgh in this stormy weather and all the way back? And the brownie said, yes. He said, well, how can I reward you? And the brownie said, I would like a coat of the finest cloth of green with gold thread through the trim. And the laird said, fair enough, I will do that for you. And the next again day he handed it to the brownie, who promptly put the coat on and left and joined his queen in Fairyland. And again, I cannot find a story like that elsewhere in Scotland. And yet every house in Scotland had a house brownie.
And you seem to be suggesting that the brownie was of male persuasion.
Yes.
And not like the junior girl guides.
No, no, indeed. Although I was a brownie when I was asked to leave the brownies because I made a bit of a mistake at one point. But I was asked to leave and not come back. But that's another story.
Well, that's another story.
But again, why, when there are house brownies and house elves and house sprites right the way across Europe, I don't know why this is border specific. But our last little tale is a funny tale. So there's a nice couple and they have a little house and a little cottage and a little garden and they're all very happy. And the man of the house is out sort of tending to the vegetable garden and the wife is inside and she's going to make them a couple of bannocks for their tea and they'll have some bannocks and cheese and milk for their tea. So she's working away in the kitchen, putting together the bannocks, and she can see her husband outside, and she sort of waves to him, and he waves back, and she doesn't pay attention to what she's doing, and she splits the mixture unevenly. And she thinks, it's no great hardship. And she puts the mixture on the griddle to cook, and she shouts to her husband, and she says, oh, it'll be ready in about 10 minutes. And she cooks them on one side, then flips them over on the other side for about another 10 minutes. And the husband comes in, and just as he comes in, she takes the big bannock off the griddle and puts it on the plate. She goes to lift the little bannock, the wee bannock, and the wee bannock jumps up and runs away. And the wife thinks, what? And the wee bannock runs away, runs through the legs of her husband and out the door, down the garden path and out into the street. And where's the wife is shouting, where's my wee bannock gone? And starts chasing after it and chasing after it with the ladle that she was going to hit it with. And it ran away and it ran past her. And she falls over and the bannock makes its escape. It runs all the way through the village. It runs past the blacksmiths and the blacksmith says, why is there a wee bannock running down the street? This is a nonsense. And he chases after it. and throws a horseshoe at it, but the wee bannock jumps through the horseshoe. And the smith sits in the road and is completely bamboozled by this. And the wee bannock runs on a little bit further, and it run past the miller's house. And the miller thinks, well, what am I going to do? And he throws his cap at it to catch it, but the wee bannock jumps out the way. It runs all the way out the village, all the way down the hillside, and all the way along the riverside. And just as the wee bannock thinks it's going to run and run and run further, it stumbles and falls. Just as it does that, a hare appears and gobbles it up.
Hare.
And again,
of course,
for those that don't know, a bannock is like a Scottish oatcake. There are people the length and breadth of Scotland make oatcakes, and yet it's only in the borders we have the wee bannock story.
But I'm thinking Selkirk bannock. You know, as you go into Selkirk, you see the home of the original bannock.
Yeah. That's more of a sort of fruit bread.
But that's bread. More a cakey bread for me. Then you're talking oat cake.
So those are three little stories that I do not understand why they're border specific. Because we have the story in the borders of Whoppity Story, who is a witch. She's involved in trying to steal somebody's baby. There is a spinning wheel involved, and the only way to break the spell is to find out her name, Whoppity Story. Well, that's Rumpelstiltskin.
Exactly.
So there's lots and lots of stories that are European wide.
Yeah.
But these three little ones just appear in the borders.
Haven't travelled. Yeah.
They haven't even travelled across Scotland. Which I find very curious, and I'm not quite sure why. I'm quite pleased that there aren't red cap stories around the way Europe, because it's pretty grisly, but I don't understand why border specific for these three.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Well, first thought would be, with the importance of colours here, we had brownies and we had red caps. My first thought is, throughout Scotland, say, are there green caps and blue caps? Are there various, if you like, different types that we come across in folklore?
Well, the fairies wear brown and green. But as far as I'm aware, there's no great colour significance there. The more senior fairies tend to wear green. But there's no significance to caps I'm aware of. I know that there are, you know, there's little Red Riding Hoods. There is, you know, in a lot of European stories, red caps are used. But the significance varies between the different areas. There's nothing that I'm aware of. I mean, red obviously signifies blood.
But the red caps you're talking about, they're more than malevolent or mischievous, they're murderous.
Yes, absolutely.
If I think to the not Disney World, but the world of Walt Disney, and if you think of the story of Snow White and the seven vertically challenged folk
right.
who are ho-ho-hoing off to work.
Mm-hmm.
If memory serves me well, it is Doc who wears the red cap.
Yes.
And Doc, I guess, is the wisest and most intelligent of that group of seven.
Yes, he seemed to be the one that could cure them were they to fall ill or injured in their work, yes.
So I'm just thinking about the significance of colours here.
Yes,
I mean,
it's
you know,
an
I sometimes
one.
In private, not on the podcast, point the finger at Hollywood for taking yes. stories and, you know, purifying them a little bit and moving too far away from the original. But that's what comes to mind.
Yes, and I mean the red, if you think of more modern terms, I mean the Smurfs.
Yeah.
Are blue, and yet they almost all wear red caps, or a couple of wear white caps. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, red is a colour associated with wearing caps, but I don't know if that's because actually red is an easy dye, perhaps red berries.
Yeah.
So it might be something as prosaic as that.
And rivers run red, and, yes. and you have, yes, the rose, Roslyn, the rose.
Okay. But why, when there are so many ruins in England and Wales and Ireland and the German states and Netherlands and everywhere else in Europe, we've been fighting each other for millennia, why do we not have these red caps elsewhere?
Are they
the angry ghosts of those that were slain in battle? Because again, but you would find that elsewhere. And why should they attack visitors who are just coming to look round the ruins? Or are they stuck in a perpetual cycle of fighting? And they're just constantly seeing people fighting because this notion, I mean, who has told them that if their caps dry out, they will die? Where does that come from?
Well, that's a strange one.
And you wouldn't, I'm not aware of a tradition of steeping your cap in the blood of your enemy.
No.
I mean, Vlad the Impaler impaled his victims, but I don't, you know, vampire blood drinking, that's very Eastern
scalping
European.
Of victims and the whole trophy
Native
thing.
Americans,
yeah.
trophies, but I don't know. So I don't know where they...
I haven't come across the dipping of caps in your victim's blood in any other part of the world.
Which is a horrific thought and pretty grisly. So folks, if you do fancy visiting the Scottish borders at Halloween of an evening, just, you know, keep an eye out if you're going to visit some of the castles or the old ruins.
Or wear a red cap, you know.
that might be the thing, wear your own red cap and perhaps you'll be safe, yes.
You're either with us or against us.
Absolutely, yes.
We're no further forward with why borders. I can see with the red caps, a little bit, perhaps, the border itself, this movable thing that is the border.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, we have the Reavers,
yes,
who are
yes.
sometimes glamorized, but yes. let's face it.
Yes, we're murderous so-and-sos.
In history, they were murderous so-and-sos,
yeah.
that's it. Although there is a lot of pomp and pageantry today around the whole common riding thing. I can see that, but the Brownies and the wee Bannock,
yes,
I'm not getting why that would be border.
No, because again, oatcakes, griddled oatcakes is again, European-wide. You cook with what you've got. You cook your basic food.
Exactly that, yeah.
And I don't know if it's a story about having so much food that the food is running out your door, possibly, or is it just a funny story about you should pay attention to what you're doing when you're cooking? I don't know. But again, if it was that, you would surely find a wee variation of that.
Mm-hmm.
Elsewhere. I mean, there is the European story about the porridge pot, which I think comes originally from Switzerland, about a magical porridge pot that keeps producing porridge and almost sort of drowns the village until you can't, you know, you sort of cast a spell to stop the spell that was producing all this porridge in the first place. But a wee bannock running away and the fact that the miller can't catch it and the blacksmith can't catch it, well, I don't get that. Again, that could be anywhere in Scotland.
Mm.
But it's border specific, the wee bannock.
In Edinburgh, should I say this on a podcast, but I did come across an American who I became friendly with who was convinced that the haggis was an animal.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a story going around that the haggis... It was four-legged.
Mm.
but had 2 legs shorter than the other two.
Oh, yes,
two.
Because it ran round hills.
So
yes,
it was
yes,
able
yes.
to run round hills.
Yes.
So I've come across that one.
Yes.
Haggai, yeah. you know, running away, and it's, but Bannock, yeah. oatcakes running yeah. out.
But you see that the Haggai story, you get that in lots of places where yeah. what people are doing is they're creating a myth uh-huh. for tourists. So yeah. you will tell them a story, something yeah. like that, you know, something silly like that. But the wee Bannock, I don't understand that. And the brownie story. All houses in Scotland have a house brownie. If you haven't seen it, folks, you have got a brownie in your house. Don't look for them, but they are there. They're keeping an eye on you. Most of them are just about mischievous. So when something goes missing, when you can't find your glasses, or you can't find the remote control for the telly, uh-huh. or whatever it is you've lost, it's not your teenage children, it's the house brownie that's just pinched them and hidden them somewhere just to annoy you. That's what they do. They find that funny.
They do, but they are benevolent by nature.
Relatively benevolent, yes. They sort of keep an eye on your house.
Your man's asleep in the corner, but they will go and get the midwife. They will make things.
But again, as we've spoken about fairies before, he's not particularly doing it because he's being nice. He's doing it because he gets something out of it. He gets his green coat. So maybe he can't go to fairyland without his green coat trimmed with gold. Mm. But again, that story could be anywhere in Scotland. That story could be anywhere in Europe. So
because that whole, you know, being paid for your good work, that's everywhere. Didn't the scouts, or do they? Bob a job.
Oh, Bob a job, yes.
You know, idea of helping in order, but you got a reward for that.
Yes. Yeah.
Is it to teach people the good old work ethic?
It could well be, but as I say, if you were to take the word Jedburgh out of that story and put in the word, I don't know, Ullapool, or Inverary, Utrecht, or Berlin, that story could sit there, and yet they don't. And yet they don't. It's really odd. Even going across into Dumfries and Galloway, which I know the definition of the Scottish borders is a movable feast. We have discussed this before. And I know Dumfries and Galloway are very proud of being Dumfries and Galloway. But, you know, I mean, they are right next door to us. And yet, no, you don't get it. Northumberland, right next door to us, you don't get it. Midlothian, nope, you don't get it. Yeah. So I'm not quite sure why. It's curious how folk tales and folk stories arise. Most of them travel. And yet the ones that don't are the ones that interest me. Why do they not travel? Mm-hmm. Why would you not find your red cats? Why would you not have a brownie up in Ayrshire, you know, riding to Ayr to get the midwife?
One could argue, and I'm not going to, but let's be hypothetical here. This could be seen as evidence of the insularity of the borders. You know, when we talk often about how Scottish... is the Scottish Borders area. It could be a fine example of protectionism and so on. But these have remained wholly border-specific.
That they haven't travelled, yes.
Now, that's only a thought. I'm only saying that could be argued.
It is curious because if you think round, you know, between the sort of, say, 10th to the 12th centuries, you did have people moving. And, you know, working as bards. Mm. And so, you know, you would literally sing for your supper. So if you've got these border stories and you go across to Dumfries and Galloway or down into Northumberland, you're not telling these border stories. And yet some stories travel and some stories don't. Which is really interesting. You've got the story of Alison Gross, who is allegedly the ugliest witch in the North Country. And that's a very Northumberland story. But it travels across to Cumbria. It travels down into Yorkshire, the Alison Gross story. Strangely, it doesn't travel up into Scottish borders, though. So I don't know why that's not travelled as much.
But you've often made the case in the past of Scottish witches being a wee bitty different from your average witch.
Yes, so that's a curious one. There
going back to redcaps, brownies and...
wee bannocks that run bannocks. About.
Have any of these stories made it into the canon? Now, there's a good one. The canon of Borders literature. Has anyone, like Sir Walter Scott...
Walter Scott loved the redcap story.
Right.
Absolutely loved the Red Cap story.
Right.
And wrote about it extensively.
Uh-huh.
And he himself was also curious as to why it had not travelled. He did a lot of research, from what I've read, in trying to find out where specifically in the borders the Red Caps were. I don't think he ever came to any great conclusion, but he was absolutely fascinated by the Red Caps. Uh-huh. And wrote, there's two or three of his letters where he's writing to friends up in Edinburgh about this Red Cap story. I think he was told it by his nurse. He had polio when he was a child.
Yeah,
he was quite sickly. I was sort of confined to bed for quite a bit of time. He's lucky that he survived, actually.
But while he's living down this part of the world.
When he was living in the borders.
Yeah.
And he had a particular nurse who was an old borders lady, and she told him all of these grisly tales. It's a bit of a story to tell a 10-year-old boy, but there you go. And he was fascinated by it.
Yeah.
And so, yes, he wrote extensively about this.
But then that's often the way, because it's believed that Robert Louis Stevenson's nurse was very integral in terms of developing his storytelling abilities.
Yes, you know, yes.
The Treasure Island, as it were, is said to exist, actually, in a part of a private garden in Edinburgh near to where he lived.
Oh, yes, yes.
So you can see that connection where the nanny or the nurse...
Oh, yes.
It's very much...
Bram Stoker...
Tell them a story.
Yep, Bram Stoker appears to have had a particularly... a nurse with a particularly dark sense of humour who would regale him with tales of cholera epidemics and typhus epidemics and having the dead do all sorts of things, which may or may not explain Dracula. But, but certainly, yes... Nannies tell stories, and of course, I mean, I have worked in primary schools across Scotland, and I can assure you that the lovely little 4 and 5 year olds that we have turn into the most bloodthirsty, unbelievable little creatures around about the age of 10 before the hormones kick in when they become teenagers. And it seems to be round about the age of 10, you cannot tell a story that's too gruesome for these children. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is about human development. I need to go and have a look at child psychology or something, but there's a particular period when children like incredibly gruesome stories. And
used
some
as
of
a
us,
pacifier, yeah.
Yes, and wish some of us don't Bonnie outgrow Burn. That.
Yeah, you've got that wish now, Bonnie Byrne, or the Black Douglas will get you.
Oh, absolutely,
you know, that,
yes.
That was just a way of pacifying youngins.
Well, I can tell you that I had a relative who shall remain nameless, as in my grandmother, who told me when I didn't behave growing up in Glasgow in the late 60s, if I didn't behave, Bible John would get me.
Oh, my word. Oh, my word.
So that was, yes, talking about pacifying children. Yes, literally, whilst he was hanging about.
Yeah.
Yes, so I didn't get a gruesome story. I got told. But again, which child of the Black Douglas will get you? It was while the Black Douglas was out there.
This
wasn't some imaginary creature like the Red Caps.
Yeah.
This was a real actual person, the Douglas.
Yes, yes.
Bible John was a real actual person. So yes, nannies and grannies, I've got a lot to answer for. That's probably why I was a goth when I was growing up.
Because I mentioned at the start that I wanted something that would take me away from my anger and sadness over the Eyemouth disaster and tick the box in terms of Halloween.
And I think one of the reasons why so many of us find humour in death when it's couched in the term of the Red Caps is to give us a relief from the reality of death, because there was nothing, there was no... Tom gave us a lovely song at the end of that podcast, but there was nothing about the Eyemouth story that was positive. Absolutely nothing. And so when you can get a story that is about death, but it's couched as a folktale, you can laugh at it, because we're all going to die at some point.
Yeah.
We know that. I always say that one of the frustrations of being a human being is that we are intelligent enough to ask the question what life is about, but not intelligent enough to know the answer.
Yeah.
It's incredibly frustrating. But that's it. We all know we're going to die. Mm. So there's nothing you can do about it. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
Find a way to deal with it. Find a way to laugh at it so that that can cope with the pain of when it's the reality of the Eyemouth disaster or things like that.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Yes.
Okay, well, I think you've, with these three stories, you have ticked the box. And I'm glad we've been able to move away from the more holistic look at Halloween. You know, we know all that, the duking for apples and all that stuff.
Exactly.
Any more stories before we finish?
Well, I thought I might actually finish with a story, a Whoppity Story, which is a lovely little story.
A Whoppity Story?
Whoppity Story. The story of Whoppity Story.
Is this going to be lighthearted?
It's going to be fun.
Okay, let's go for it.
There was a young woman, and she lived at the edge of the village. It was her and her little baby, but she was very, very happy. She had her little house, and she had her chickens, and she had a cow and some pig, and she had her little vegetable garden, and she did very, very well. And one day she was out in the garden, and she saw an old lady going by. And as she saw the old lady go by, the old lady tripped and almost fell. So the young woman went out to help her and said, oh, come in and help. I'll bandage your ankle and all this. And she did. Everything was lovely. And she gave the old lady, she gave her a bannock and she gave her a bit of cheese and she gave her some milk. And the whole time her little baby is sort of lying cooing in the cradle. And the old lady looked over and went, oh, what a lovely baby that is. And she said, oh, thank you very much. And then the old lady sort of rested up for a little while and then she headed off. And she said, are you okay? And the old lady said, fine. And the young woman said, well, is there anything else I can do for you? And the old lady said, yes, give me your baby. And all of a sudden the atmosphere changes. And the young woman says, well, what? I beg your pardon? She said, give me your child. I want your child. It's your fault. I tripped over. And the girl said, well, it's nothing to do with me. You tripped over in the lane. Oh, no. It's your fault. I want your baby. And the young woman said, but I can't give you my baby. And the old woman said, well, you've got 3 days. It'll be Halloween in 3 days. And I'm coming for that baby. And the young woman said, well, what can I do? And she says, there's nothing you can do. Absolutely nothing you can do. And starts to walk away. And of course, there's nothing wrong with her ankle. And as she walks away, the young girl shouts, well, what's your name? And the old woman turns back and said, if you can find out my name, then I won't take your baby. So the young girl rushes back indoors and picks up her baby. She's cuddling her baby. She doesn't know what to do. And it must be some sort of witch. What on earth is she going to do? What is she going to do? So that evening she calls on a neighbour and gives the neighbour her baby and rushes out and follows the path that she thinks the old woman took. She searches and searches and searches. And finally she comes across this tiny little cottage and she peeks in the window and hears the old lady spinning at a spinning wheel, spinning what looks like straw, possibly into what looks like gold thread. And she thinks, wow, oh, she must be some sort of witch, but what's her name? What's her name? There's nobody about to ask. And she waits all night, but can't think of what to do. So she goes home and takes care of her baby. And then the next again night, she knows at least where to go. And so she leaves her baby with the neighbour and she rushes to the old woman's door and she knocks on the door and the woman shouts, who's there? And she shouts back, who are you? And the old woman shouts, I'm not that daft, and goes back to spinning. And the girl thinks, oh dear, that really didn't work. So again, she spends all night walking up and down, not sure what she's going to do. Runs home, goes to see her baby. Oh, what am I going to do? So it's the last night. It's the start of Samhain.
She had 3 days.
It's the start
of
Halloween.
Yeah.
And she rushes to the old woman's house and the old woman's starting to spin. And the old woman looks to be in a bit of a temper or something. She's not quite sure what's going on. Maybe it's the fact that it's coming up to Samhain. And the girl has a sudden idea. She looks round the old woman's garden and there are some thistles. She grabs some thistles and throws them onto the pile of straw that the old woman is spinning.
Mm-hmm.
And the old woman's not paying attention to what she's doing. And she picks up one of the thistles jags herself and shouts out, oh, dearie me, what can I do? Poor old me, poor Whoppity Story. And the young woman goes, that's it. Gotcha. Runs home. On the stroke of midnight, she's sitting with her baby. And the old woman appears and says, give me your baby. The young woman looks at the old woman and says, no, I will not, Whoppity Story. On you go, on your way. At that, the old woman jumps up and down, but is defeated and turns and walks away.
Uh-huh.
Shades of Rumpelstiltskin.
Yes.
But Whoppity Story is borders again.
Again, specific. Borders.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. The insularity again. This is the prevention of the transformation. You know, going through the glass, moving from dark to light, moving from life to death. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fascinating. Now that's one I have never heard before.
You've never heard Whoppity Story. Well,
Whoppity
there you
Story.
Go.
Yeah.
Indeed.
So thank you very much. Excellent. I think you've ticked all the boxes
all right.
today then. And,
shadowy and magical and all of the boxes.
Certainly not so sad, depressing and anger-inducing as the IMS disaster.
Indeed.
Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Until the next time.
Bye for now.
Bye for now.
Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about. I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question two ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And, spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think. Come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical. New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's HYPERTHETICAL.